District of Conservation is sponsored by CFACT. To learn more about our sponsor, head over to CFACT.org. Thank you so much for listening and for considering the podcast today.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to District of Conservation. I'm your host, Gabriella Hoffman. This podcast offers a sober examination into all things hunting, fishing, shooting sports, energy, environment, and the public policy surrounding it. And this podcast also specializes in original interviews that you won't hear elsewhere. Here's what I have for you today. I hope you had a wonderful week. I just came back from the ALEC States and Nations Summit in Scottsdale, Arizona, where I presented on natural asset companies, a topic I've been honing in on with Margaret Beifeld of American Stewards of Liberty. I'm also going to be speaking about it tomorrow in the Western Caucus, going to present it to staff and lawmakers there, from my understanding. So it's been very go, go, go. But before I dip into today's topic concerning the Endangered Species Act turning 50 this month and the news over listing the lower 48 wolverine with protections, threatened protections in particular, I want to kind of give an interesting recap of what I did in Arizona outside of my speech. Arizona, if you didn't know, is obviously not a desert entirely. A lot of it is desert close to the Phoenix area, but even amidst the desert, it's really beautiful. I've only spent a limited time in Arizona. I spent a couple days there last year when I was filming my public lands report for Conservation Nation that I do with CFACT. And I've been to the Grand Canyon once or twice before. I think it was at least once when I was a teenager. And so I've gotten to visit and familiarize myself with the state more. But about 45 or so minutes out of Scottsdale is the Tonto National Forest and I believe what is known as the Lower Salt River. I went there with Representative Quang Nguyen, who we've had here on the podcast. He fled communist Vietnam. He's a very avid outdoorsman, really good steward conservationist in the Arizona State Legislature. And we were filming what is going to be the relaunch of a video series I did in the past for The Resurgent, which I've been able to reclaim and relaunch, called Outsiders on the Inside. We did film the inaugural episode of that. Self-filming is challenging, but a lot of fun. And we filmed it there, did not catch any trout. That was our target, but we did get to obviously enjoy the surroundings, seeing cacti in the background and a beautiful river. Of course, it was windy, so that's probably why we didn't catch any fish. But the wildlife offerings in Arizona in this particular area were super interesting to see. So first thing I saw, a notable wildlife species I saw, was a bobcat. They're very hard to spot in the daytime, and I saw the backside of it, and it ran too quickly for me to capture any image of it, but I have witnesses with me to testify that we did see a bobcat close to the river, and so that was really neat. And another animal that has almost kind of like a ubiquitous presence there, and I didn't know this, feral horses reside in the Lower Salt River just outside Phoenix, specifically Scottsdale. Because when you think of wild horses or feral horses, you think Nevada, you think some other states, not necessarily Arizona, but a herd of feral horses resides in this portion of Arizona. And what Game and Fish employees told me during our adventure here, when we spotted them and we saw their droppings, because they're everywhere, it's inescapable when you're in this portion of the Salt River hiking around to fish. These horses, while beautiful and interesting, are very problematic. And there's a huge debate surrounding feral horses. Of course, it obviously consumes people in Arizona as well. There's groups to protect the horse. There's other efforts to sustainably manage the horse and get them off the landscape. So it's a very heated topic. But I've heard from different Arizonans who say, while beautiful, you have to be aware that feral horses are very problematic in some regards. So to see them was really cool. They weren't aggressive towards us and we kept our distance. We recreated responsibly. And then as we were going back to our car, after obviously not catching any fish, but still admiring the wildlife and the nature around us, I got to see like a pack of quails, which was really cool. I wasn't close enough to capture them more closely, but I did see them from far away. So a lot of wildlife encounters in such a short time, right on the outskirts of Scottsdale. And Phoenix, you never know what resides close to metropolitan areas. Wildlife is pretty resilient and they can lurk wherever you look. I'm also going to be at the Congressional Sportsman Foundation, NASC, Sportsman Legislator Summit. It's the 20th annual one, and it's here on the East Coast this year. So I figured it would be an opportune time to go and network, and we'll be recording some podcasts. I hope to sit down with some lawmakers and activists, true conservationists at the summit. So you will be seeing some content from Delaware. Now to kind of the main crux of today's episode, the Endangered Species Act. And it turning 50 years old on December 28th. I'm going to have some write-ups about this at Town Hall, Independent Women's Forum. I'm in the process of formulating an op-ed, kind of overall discussing the Endangered Species Act, where it stands today, why the law is not working as intended, what interferes with the law from working as intended, some of the obstacles to reform, why there's no modernization, why the law has been successful in preventing 99% of extinction, but does a poor job, a measly 3% of recovering and delisting species. You've heard me talk about this topic at length here. I've brought on guests to talk about this. The law is very popular. Like 90% of Americans support it. But when they learn and detangle a little more, they want to see the law work better than what it's currently doing. And it relates to charismatic megafauna, such as wolverines. So you probably have heard the news that the Fish and Wildlife Service is recommending putting North American wolverines, specifically the lower 48 population segment, awarding them and recommending threatened protections on the Endangered Species Act. There are about 300 individuals of this lower 48 wolverine left in the wild. And this has been the case, I think, since 2016. I saw numbers pointing to the fact that populations have stayed at 300 since that time. And a problem with ESA protections, what I saw in Columbia University in one of the studies there and something in Science Magazine, and I'll link to it, is proponents of the ESA, I wouldn't call them proponents, I think these are hijackers of the ESA, who claim to support the law, but they wait until a species in peril is on its like last legs and it needs it, instead of being proactively in support of wanting to list a species, get it back on track. And this is a problem with the law, and in terms of implementation and it working to its fullest extent, they wait forever or until the last cusp or when a species is really in danger of potentially going extinct to award protections because it's politically convenient. And then certain groups can fundraise off of such a condition, and that cycle continues. Let's read from the Fish and Wildlife Service press release as to their justification for listing the wolverine. So this is dated November 29th of last week. North American wolverine receives federal protection as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act, and the service seeks comment period on interim 4D rule promoting measures tailored to the wolverine's conservation needs. What is the 4D rule? 4D, as stipulated under the Endangered Species Act, pertains to this. And this is from the Fish and Wildlife Service website for your knowledge, if you're unsure, because it has a lot of different components. Section 4D under the ESA is one of many tools for the ESA to protect threatened species. This rule gets its name from Section 4D of the ESA, which directs the Secretary of Interior, including Fish and Wildlife Director, to issue regulations deemed, quote, necessary and advisable to provide for the conservation of threatened species. And why is 4D needed? The ESA provides a specific list of protections for endangered species, but ESA does not automatically provide the same protections to threatened species. Without a 4D rule, threatened species do not receive Section 9 protections, although federal agency ESA Section 7 consultation requirements, recovery requirements still apply. Given reduced protections for threatened species without a 4D rule, the service proposes a specific 4D rule concurrently with any proposed classifying a species as a threatened species, and finalizes the rule concurrently as well. And there were some contention over lifting reforms from the Trump administration. I remember this because relating to critical habitat designation. And I have to recall if that's exactly what it is. But threatened and endangered species, there was also another rule pertaining to not assigning the same stipulations for both threatened and endangered protections. And I think that's what the Biden administration recently did to undo those reforms, offering more clarity on this. That is why we're not seeing this as well. So now back to the press release. They have said that they're issuing a final rule to list a distinct population segment of the North American wolverine in the contiguous U.S. as a threatened species under the ESA. It's also issuing an interim rule under ESA Section 4D tailored to the wolverine's conservation needs that exempts take related to research activities, take incidental to lawful trapping for other species, and take resulting from forest management activities associated with wildfire risk reduction in the contiguous U.S. One of the regional directors, Hugh Morrison, said current and increasing impacts of climate change and associated habitat degradation and fragmentation are imperiling the North American wolverine. Based on the best available science, the listing determination will help to stem the long-term impact and enhance the visibility of wolverines in the contiguous United States. In September 2023, the service updated its 2018 species status assessment for the wolverine with an addendum that reflects new information since 2018. The addendum evaluated updated information on climate change, habitat connectivity, trapping snow, population and density, and impacts on genetic diversity, as well as considered changes in regulatory mechanisms and conservation measures. The North American wolverine is a medium-sized carnivore found in the Rocky Mountains and North Cascades Mountains in the contiguous U.S. and alpine regions, boreal forests, and tundra of Alaska and Canada. Wolverines are snow-adapted, cold climate, and territorial animals with large home ranges. I want to read for you a letter in counter to this rule, which I think is reasonable. It's from the Montana delegation, the one at-large congressman, or actually two congressmen, Congressman Rosendale and Zinke, formerly Interior Secretary, and Senator Steve Daines. Here's what their letter says, countering the justification of using climate change as a means to list a population. I think for those of us who study the ESA who have commented about it, you haven't seen climate listed as a prerequisite for listing a species as endangered or threatened. This is the first time seeing this. And what the letter from the Montana delegation to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Martha Williams contends with reads like this: any decision about placing or removing a species on the ESA must be based on updated population data, not potential climate effects on a portion of the habitat. Under federal statute, ESA determinations must be made solely on the basis of the best scientific and commercial data available after conducting a review on the status of a species, according to the ESA. When the Department of Interior moved to delist the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem segment of grizzly bears in 2017, the decision was based on robust data from the Interagency Grizzly Bear Study Team that has been monitoring the population since the 1970s. Such data is not publicly available for the wolverine and was not used in this proposal. The Fish and Wildlife Service proposed rule dated November 23rd, 2022, requests data on, quote, the historical and current status, range, distribution, and population size of the species, including the locations of additional populations of wolverines, end quote. Despite not including the results of this data request, the Fish and Wildlife Service proposed rule dated June 27th, 2023, recommends listing the wolverine as an endangered species. Moreover, the species status assessment addendum published by Fish and Wildlife Service in September of 23 relies on population estimates from 2013 that the study's own author describes as, quote, lacking or based on very sparse data, end quote. Assessments in 2022 by the Fish and Wildlife Service indicate that the loss of wolverine habitat due to climate change and other factors is not as significant as previously suggested in a 2013 assessment. While the Fish and Wildlife Service seems to think that the 2023 SSA qualifies the wolverine to be listed as an endangered species under potential climate-related changes to habitat, the assessment itself states, in summary, specific thresholds regarding snow dynamics and how changes in these factors will impact wolverines in the future at the population level remain uncertain. And later, we have identified significant uncertainties that hamper our ability to predict the scope, scale, and timing of future outcomes for wolverines in the contiguous United States. And then they list that the ESA aims to prevent the extinction of species and plants within their natural range. The requirement to qualify as a threatened species under the ESA is that the species is, quote, likely to become endangered in the foreseeable future throughout all or a significant portion of its range, end quote. Basing this determination on climate modeling and projections that have been consistently inaccurate over decades does not meet the likely standard or even probable at this stage The North American population of wolverines shares genetic roots with the first wolverines who crossed the Bering Strait. Wolverines have demonstrated remarkable resilience, surviving and adapting to various climate fluctuations, including the Ice Age and other periods of extreme climate change. This longstanding presence, in North America underscores the wolverine's ability to endure and adapt. It is wrong to base an ESA determination on unreliable climate predictions for any species, but especially for one that has proven to be so climate resilient. Is that something the Fish and Wildlife Service is going to consider with their rule here? Highly doubtable. Every agency in this administration, especially those tailored to Interior, Energy, EPA, are all so gung-ho about attaching everything to climate, even though not every environmental situation can be explained or propped up by climate. It's just an easy thing to do and to use, even if the science does not substantiate it. It's just easy to say and scream climate change is imperiling this or climate change that. But when you do that, you take away resources from restoring a species to its grandeur. When you scream something is climate change, monies do not go to fixing that. Or if you say, you know, we have to do this in line with environmental justice or whatever, monies get deferred from actual rehabilitation efforts or conservation efforts when you attach climate to it as well. So that is something you have to ponder and think when you're hearing about this discussion about listing wolverines. What science are they really using? I agree, you have to use population data. You shouldn't be using climate as a justification, because then they're going to use it for every single animal. They're going to say grizzly bears, which have been documented and are fully recovered by threshold measures, especially the GYE population segment, over 1,000 individuals. You can't say that climate is a justification to keep them listed when their population numbers have far well rebounded and meet the threshold of recovery, should be delisted like yesterday. But because they don't want management to be part of the equation when a species is fully delisted, because it's a charismatic megafauna, that is why you have grizzly bears listed in perpetual ESA protections. My concern is we're going to see the same with wolverines as well. But as the letter stated, they're pretty climate resilient. So why are you using a climate as a justification? You should be using sound, provable data, not invent something out of thin air. And that's what worries me about this Fish and Wildlife Service. They're being guided by emotion, not science. And when you have that for these decisions, then you impact the whole discussion about conservation, and you have ballot box biology. You have other repercussions that come down the pike where it's not the science that is guiding decisions to list or delist a species or to conserve or not conserve a species. You have emotion. You have climate that can't be backed up by data, climate factors rather, that are not provable by data as a justification for, you know, recovering a species or justification to relist a species. So we're seeing this creep into critical, sensitive scientific decisions as it relates to wildlife conservation. And that should worry us that they're using this and not an actual provable point to justify why a wolverine needs protections or more attention to their status as a species. And we certainly should care about wolverines. But it's interesting that Alaska doesn't have an issue with this. And I've noticed this with endangered salmon too. Like in the lower 48, we have problems with salmon. Salmon are not, you know, at healthy numbers. But in Alaska, there's no problem so far. Same with wolverines. So, and they have active management in those areas. So what is going on here? Why this explains that they're in a far more perilous situation than, let's say, their counterparts in Alaska. That begs the question. But anyway, we're going to talk more about the ESA this month, approaching the 50th anniversary. Like I said, I like this law. I think it's poorly implemented and not used to its full potential, and it's hijacked by opportunists in the preservationist environmentalist world. So we want the ESA to work as intended. It's a good law, but it has a lot of, you know, downsides to it when it's not properly utilized. It doesn't incentivize stakeholders to want to work in compliance with the law. It actually turns off stakeholders who would otherwise be compliant, because people don't know this, but endangered species today fall largely on private lands. And if you're penalizing private landowners and disincentivizing them from wanting to work with the federal government or states to recover a species, how can this law work as intended? It doesn't. And then you create discord and upheaval and distrust with the federal government, which is justified because the federal government hasn't learned how to build trust with stakeholders. They've just alienated a lot of people over the years. And so we want reforms. We need a modernization to the ESA. I've fully advocated for that before. I'm advocating for it now today in this episode. But this Wolverine case study is really interesting, and we're going to continue to follow it. I would love to hear your thoughts. But ESA, very convoluted, complicated topic. We're going to try to make it simple and more readily understood here on the podcast, as we've done before. Maybe I'll bring back David Wilms and others I've talked to about the ESA to get some clarity on this, especially relating to the different sections and some of the rulemaking that has come down to really undermine and harm the ESA from working as intended, because we've seen a reversion to Obama-era rules where there are so many broad generalizations and broad applications of the law, and then it, you know, doesn't obviously work to recover species or promote delisting, which is very much component to the law. You have to have delisting as an aim of the law if you're, you know, listing something as threatened or protection. The goal is to ultimately recover and delist the species. That's what the rule states. Have you had any interactions with wolverines? I want to know if you have, whether it's in Alaska or in the lower 48, and what can be done meaningfully to boost their numbers. Is it going to take ESA regulation, or is it going to take private efforts of individuals, states, nonprofits coming together to bring them back, especially with the ESA being blocked and undermined by those who ironically say they're its biggest champions, which they're not. When you look at all the different things they do, sue and settle, interference with wildlife management decisions, interference with biologists and work on the ground in the states, and presenting, you know, arguments like the climate argument when population data should be what determines whether or not to list a species. So that's what I have to say on the topic. Want to hear your feedback. Let me know what you think. Thanks for listening to District of Conservation. If you enjoyed what you heard today, go leave us some reviews on Apple and Spotify or wherever podcasts are played. Your feedback will help us reach more people, and I love to know what is on your mind after each episode. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to never miss a beat or a guest announcement, because that is our way of updating all of you listeners. And we have just hit 1,000 followers on Instagram for the podcast account. Thank you very much. And if you have any guest suggestions or topics you want to hear on the show, I'm all ears. I would love to hear your feedback there. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode. I will be having some episodes, maybe from ALEC, definitely from Congressional Sportsman Foundation next week, but I'll have an overview of ALEC and what I did there on behalf of CFACT. But I appreciate you listening, and thank you for supporting the show.